From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, it is now less than 7 weeks away, officially Election Day, although early voting here starts October 26th. But for these next 7 weeks or so, we are sitting down with candidates for office who will appear on your ballot, a chance to get to know candidates at length. And yesterday, we sat down with the incumbent Monroe County Clerk, Jamie Romeo, a Democrat. Today, we welcome the Republican in that race. And we say hello to Peter Vazquez, who is running. Thank you for being in the studio with us, Peter.
The honor is mine, sir. Thank you for the invitation.
Peter's website is peterforcountyclerk.com. He's the executive director of the Cuca Housing Council, the host of Next Steps on WYSL, noon every day. Noon every day. I'm on at noon every day, Peter.
I know. I had to completely rearrange a schedule to be here. But listen, though, I wouldn't have missed it for the world, though. I love what I do.
You've got a great voice for radio. Peter was saying before the program began, if you had discovered radio earlier in your life, this might have been what you did forever, huh?
Absolutely. Listen, if my show was realized 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't be in this race today. I'd be doing what you're doing. I mean, I'd be holding them accountable more on the air.
There you go. Tell people what the show is about on WYSL, Peter.
Absolutely. It's called the Next Step Show, and our focus is to help individuals, all our listeners, find that balance between faith, politics, and entrepreneurship. And Evan, I've read a lot of help books, for example, Prominent People, everything that I can get my hands on. And the one thing that I didn't see in any of them was a discussion on how is it that you can balance all three of those very critical components in your life to kind of find your next steps. And that's where my show originated from. And I do want to clarify, faith, politics, and entrepreneurship doesn't mean any particular party or faith. And entrepreneurship truly means understanding that you are your first corporation. And until you get that resolved and built out the way you want it, it's kind of hard to help other people.
Well, that's what Peter's doing on the radio. And the executive director of the Cuca Housing Council, for how long have you been doing that, Peter?
I've been doing that for just about a year. Prior to that, I was the executive director of Batavia, of a housing council in Batavia. And, our focus is affordable housing and home ownership. I coined a phrase from homelessness to home ownership, which I think is the concept that we should all be kind of behind.
And that's at Cuca, not Cayuga. So that's down in Yates County.
That's in Yates County, right. Cuca with a K.
Yep. So in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit about why you chose this office to run for. And I know that a big part of your story and why you think that you're suited for this office is business acumen and the value that that can bring to government. But before that, let's talk a little bit about yourself. I mean, for listeners who don't know much about you, you are from Rochester originally. Why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I believe that all my experiences has kind of brought me to where I am today, to be able to run for this position and have the experience both professionally and personally to be able to really shape this office into one that is customer service, community focused, and is in the community every day. Born and raised right here in Rochester, grew up in the Clinton Avenue area. Actually, I grew up all over the city. I will say there's not a part of the city of Rochester, or really the county of Monroe, that I haven't either walked, rode a bike on, or and somehow lived on. Evan, I grew up in a time where I was being told things like what I see in front of me is what I have. And, that kind of led to different thinking, I guess I should say. I had a solid home. Mom and dad, uncle lived with us, grandma lived with us, and five brothers and sisters. My father would leave me little notes saying, hey, here goes a dime, stay in school in his broken Spanish. But the narrative was a little different outside of home. It was, again, what you see in front of you is what you have. So right around the beginning of the 10th grade, I pretty much said, if what's in front of me is all I have, then what's the point in all this formal education that they're saying that I need? Now, I was an AB student. It wasn't like I was a trouble student. I may be a little mouthy. But, in the 9th grade, I was a teen parent. I had my first child at 15. And, my 9th grade global studies teacher had given me a cigar saying, it's a boy. So I felt validated in what I was doing. I mean, again, the narrative was taking me where I needed to be. So one day, I'm out doing my knuckleheaded stuff. And yes, I was a knucklehead as a teenager. And I walked into school, and one of the administrators came out of his office and he says, you don't want to be here, do you? And I said, absolutely not. This is a waste of my time. So he had me sign a piece of paper, Evan, and I left for the day. And for for the rest of that school year. I hopped in a bus and left. My parents were were none the wiser. And
so you weren't going to school. You were getting on the bus to go to school, but then you'd go elsewhere.
I'd go elsewhere, yes. And elsewhere we probably shouldn't discuss on the air. No, I'm just kidding. Well, it wasn't that bad. I fancied myself as a gangster for like 7 minutes until people like Doña Belén Colón or RPD and others kind of saw me hanging out over by Don Samuel Torres Park, and they were like, really, do I need to call mom and dad? And I put my head down in shame and said, no, I'm leaving. And that was the extent of my street life.
But you eventually get to the military. What's the age that you enlisted?
I enlisted at 17. And kind of what led to that is, again, there was a big disconnect between what was told to me at home and what I was seeing in the community or hearing in the community. But one day I figured, man, there's got to be more to life than this. And I grew up in church. I grew up, as a Christian, as a Catholic. And so I was a weird kid, Evan. I loved watching C-SPAN. It was intriguing to me, but
watched C-SPAN.
C-SPAN, yeah. Back in the day when your remote control was a 50-long foot cord and the little slider thing. But watching C-SPAN, I would look at those individuals, and they truly did fit the bill of the narrative that was fed to me. They were all white, they were all old, they all had white hair for the most part, and they were all dictating how is it that I was going to live. That was the narrative that I was fed. So I'm like, okay, that they must be a special breed of people that were created by God in order for us to live, right? But then I started realizing that was kind of malarkey. So I searched high and low. I know I screwed up. I was a teen parent. And one day looking at my son, he was probably 4 years old at the time, I knew I had to do better. And at that point, the military seemed to have been the best way out. So when I joined the military, I didn't join for any patriotic reasons or anything like that at the time, even though I've always loved my country. My father always said, mira, be Puerto Rican, fly your flag, but never over the United States flag. And that stuck with me. But listen, it didn't take more than a few months in the military that I started realizing the value of being American. And at that point, that became a way of life for me.
And then what was your 20s like?
20s. Most of my 20s, actually all of my 20s, all of my 20s, I believe I was in the military. I traveled the world. I went through and I got my GED. Well, I got my GED right before I joined the military. And I spent that entire time defining who Peter Vasquez was, defining what things meant to me, that whole concept of faith, politics, and entrepreneurship. That's where I kind of focused my time. I developed things like a mission statement. I developed things like a plan for my life. I knew that I'm either going to do the 20 years and get out, or I'm going to do as many years as I can before I get out. I learned to love my country, traveling the world, living in over 22 countries where I spent 2 months or more immersed in a culture. I really did realize that, man, the United States is truly the freest country, and I mean free in all aspects, than any other country in the world that I visited.
So you end up, when you're done with your time in service, you've talked in this campaign a lot about your business acumen. So tell listeners about the other aspects of your career and what you've been doing.
Absolutely. So my business acumen, my English still gets a little broken. They call it Peter talk. Really started while I was in the military. So my job, I guess, my MOS was 92 Alpha and 92 Yankee, both in the logistics field. 92 Alpha was my official last MOS, and it was all service-oriented, not just the military or the base that I worked in, but outside military that would go. In my tenure, I was able to save several million dollars, I think to the tune of $13 million, if I remember correctly, in items that were either lost or never turned in, together in collaboration with many commanders throughout the division. We were able to really enhance and solidify what's called the BOSS program, or the Better for Better Opportunity for Single Soldiers, people living in the barracks. I worked for a general the latter part of my career. So a lot of those things put together honed my business skills, or my desires to do more than just be an employee, to lead, really. When I left the military, I worked for the IRS for a short time. In that short time that I worked for the IRS, I was a tax collector. I actually had one of the higher rates of full payments, but one of the lower rates of enforcements, because I realized that when you have a conversation with somebody, when you take on the role of leadership, and instead of saying, do what I tell you and pay this tax bill because we told you, you kind of take the time to figure out why they owe it to begin with. I figured out most people didn't not want to pay them. They were just too afraid to do something about it, right? But then shortly thereafter, I also said, or while I was doing that, I also sat on 7 different volunteer boards. I really wanted to give back to the community. I wanted to help as much as I possibly could. And Evan, that's when I realized that the issues that we're dealing with, and I say grassroots, but not just politically or nonprofit or anything. I mean me and you, people who are working every single day, the people that are in the weeds, the issues that we dealt with were systemic. And those systemic issues were coming directly from the state. And that's where I decided to get into politics. Well, just different policies. Again, growing up here, I remember Rochester being one of the most thriving communities that I've seen with Clinton Avenue. If you remember, they changed some of the local street signs to Spanish because of the Hispanic presence. I mean, the mom and pop stores, the bakeries, all of them were prominent. And I saw the decline of my community happen right in front of my eyes. And Evan, it was all due to policy. That's the only change.
What's
in this
example?
City.
What's an example?
Oh man, I mean, you know what? I didn't write down exactly which policies, but looking at the different policies, for example, most recently the bail reform, the crime increase that we've seen, this whole shift from, hey, let's work together as a community, setting politics aside so that we can come up with policy that truly enhances working with churches and others, bringing prayer into the community as a tool to help children find hope somewhere, right? That was all removed based on policy. Most recently, the bail reform, left your child reform, Not Left Behind. I forgot the actual name on it. I'm sorry. You know, those kind of policies is what's really brought our society, our community, from where we were to where we are. We've shifted from let's help each other find our path forward to one of victimhood, a victim mentality.
You think prayer was taken out of your community?
I think that prayer has been demonized more than not. I think prayer,
but by the culture or by the state?
More by the state than by the culture.
So
I think by the influence
state, yeah,
of the state.
Tell me more about that.
Well, let's take prayers in school, for example. That is a state mandate. There is no prayers in schools. I know that a couple of years ago, for example, one of the mayors, I believe it was Lovely, maybe it was Lovely, that had instituted or had commissioned several prayer leaders, I guess, to kind of walk through the hallways. But all the students had to have been away from this movement in order to be able to discuss personal experiences. My youngest son was almost expelled from school because he brought in a children's book that was biblically based. It was one of the stories in the Bible, and it was for his reading time, not to share with his peers. So that was taken out. That was the state, not anybody else.
I hear you, and I mean, I don't know the story with your son, and if a school is going to expel someone for on their own time reading a book that's biblically based.
In the third grade, to boot.
In the third grade. I think most people would find that pretty shocking. That's separate, I think, than saying, should we have a sanctioned prayer in school? I mean, do you want sanctioned prayer, a school-led prayer?
Well, I think that I think that a teacher having the ability to use all the resources disposable to them is important. And I think that if prayer is one of those tools. Now, I was a teacher at Charles Finney for about 5.5 years. By chance, I didn't go to college to be a teacher, but I loved teaching. I was an adjunct professor at Roberts. I was a substitute teacher at Charles Finney. I got to teach Spanish and cross-culture communication for a little over 5 years. And I'll tell you, the school has a lot of students from some of the toughest areas in our city, in our county, that came there and are now graduates of John Hopkins and Harvard and others. And you know, having that ability to sit down with them and say, hey, do you want to pray about this, was crucial. And seeing their, I mean, it just gave them hope. So, yes, having it as a tool, maybe not as a mandate, maybe not as a you must do this kind of stuff, but giving the teachers the ability to put their arm around their student and say, let's pray for a second. Absolutely, if appropriate.
Denomination doesn't matter?
Why would denomination matter? As a matter of fact, I consider myself non-denominational. You know, like I said, I've traveled the world. I've seen a lot of different different religions, and this is what I believe, Evan. I believe in God, country, family. Many, you know, if someone wants to call me radical for that, that's not a political statement. But that is why I do the things that I do, because I do believe that spirituality has a big role. And what that means to an individual is up to an individual. As a matter of fact, all your, like, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholic Anonymous, they all have a spiritual component to it. So if those have a spiritual component, I just attended recently a service on Sunday in a local church where they presented. It was called From the Crack House to the Pulpit, and that pastor brought in different pastors from the city, from here in Rochester, from the toughest areas, and even had one major drug dealer come in who hit rock bottom. I think it was Kerry from Buffalo Bills when he had cancer. I mean, the first thing that they did was call out for national prayer. So we know it works, even if we don't believe in it. Right. So, yes, absolutely. I do think that that's something we should embrace.
I want to assure listeners, I did not plan to spend a whole lot of time talking about prayer in school with Peter Vasquez because he's running for Monroe County Clerk, which is not really the province of the County Clerk. So we're going to get back to County Clerk issues in just a second. But I enjoy talking to Peter. And I actually think it's valuable for listeners to understand more about who you are.
Yes.
And why your views are shaped the way they are. So the last question on that is, I think what I hear from you, to correct me if I'm wrong here, I think what you are saying is you're not calling for top-down prayer in school, mandated. Everyone, every day we're going to pray. Every day it's going to be led over the loudspeaker or the teacher is going to make people do it. You're saying that the option should be there. You've seen the benefit of the option. You've seen it for people who've been hurting the most in society, and you want that brought in as an open door, not a mandate. Can you understand why some, usually on the political left, are suspicious of that because they can point to numerous examples where students were penalized for not participating in prayer, or it did become a mandate? Can you see that?
Yeah, absolutely can, which is why it shouldn't be a mandate. I think that any teacher that decides, or any individual, teacher, police, it doesn't matter, anybody in a position of authority that says, you must do this because I told you to, especially is something so personal, like politics and prayer, right, should be reprimanded, absolutely. But to completely say, look, we all agree that words like kindness and happiness and all those things are important, right? So if a child or a student at home understands the concept of Jesus Christ, then why wouldn't a teacher be allowed to at least leverage that with that student? And as far as the political left, I would say that that they would have a valid point if they applied that concern across the board. But that isn't applied across the board because there are religions, for example, the Muslim religion, that is allowed to practice their faith in schools.
Talking to Peter Vasquez, he's running for county clerk. PeterForCountyClerk.com is the website. If you missed it, listeners, Jamie Romeo, the Democrat, the incumbent, was on this program yesterday. So this is our chance to talk to both candidates this week. And you have said often that you do think business acumen is really important for a job like county clerk. Yesterday, Jamie Romeo said she doesn't think the clerk's job is a job for beginners. Now, I asked her, did you feel like a beginner when you started? And she said, because she spent a lot of time behind-the-scenes work and then some public-facing work in government at different levels, doing a lot of different things over years, she felt like she entered that office with a firm understanding of what was going to be required and what the work was like and how to be connected. So not necessarily, she did not necessarily feel like a beginner, but she is concerned that it is not a job for beginners. It's complex, it's difficult, it's important. How do you see that issue? Is it a job for beginners? Would you feel like a beginner?
Gotcha. But you know, no, I won't feel like a beginner. As a matter of fact, I believe that having an individual that doesn't or that has not truly participated in the background or in the forefront in politics is probably the best option for this job because it isn't a political job. Listen, I've run organizations statewide where I've managed a combination of paid and volunteered employees and different statewide initiatives, many which you and I think have talked about in the past. Maybe my role at Cayuga Housing Council, my employees are only 11. However, the work that we do requires managing an enormous amount of not only assets, but individuals that are using those assets and all the many state-mandated and very complex grants that come with them. In the military, like as I mentioned, I worked for a one-star general in the support capacity. We ran several, multiple initiatives division-wide, hundreds, thousands of individuals impacted impacted by the things that we do. I don't know about this not being for beginners. Frankly, in my opinion, I think politics should always be for beginners. As a matter of fact, once upon a time, the Senate, the U.S. Senate, was bringing in people without political ideas so that we can bring in genuine ideas. Evan, I'm a community-focused guy. I've got over 30 years of customer service experience, and that is what the county clerk's office needs. It may be a government entity, but it's a government entity that should run more like a corporation or a nonprofit at the very least. We should be in our communities. We should be 100% focused on the customers that we're intended to serve, and especially because we're not taxpayer-funded in any way, because the funds that we receive are coming from the hardworking individuals that they have to pay for a service, yes, absolutely. The individual there should know exactly what they're doing from a business perspective. As far as politics goes, I understand politics all day long, and I understand this. Every single elected official has a primary obligation of advocacy, and advocacy against your own. And in that perspective, when it comes to politics, you can bet I know exactly what I'm doing.
In terms of advocacy or willing to call out your own or go against the grain?
Listen, you've got to go against the grain. Evan, I think it's. I mean, everybody knows no one wins when you're advocating. No one wins in negotiation. You know, everybody walks out unhappy, but the people that benefit the most are the people that we're serving. So right now, I'm not seeing any of that. And that comes, in my opinion, from a lack of leadership.
All right, so let's talk about that. So you do Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. It seems that you do find fault in how the clerk's office is being run right now. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. You know, when I was asked to run for this race, and look, I running a campaign is the most tumultuous thing anybody can do. It's time consuming. It's emotional. On top of that, I run a relatively large organization serving multiple counties. And on top of that, I got five kids, two grandkids, two more under. I'm a pretty busy guy. But so before I decided to run, I decided to take a look at what was happening in the clerk's office. I decided to make some phone calls, ask people. And when I realized that from the clerk's office, we were truly missing that whole thing of leadership is what really threw my arm in there. I mean, it's been 4 years that we haven't seen certain services like the mobile DMV. We look at COVID. I'm like, man, COVID was an opportunity for innovation of no kind. The funding was there and the opportunity was there to make significant changes. I didn't see any of that, which is what led me to throw my name in for this run.
Well, your opponent said yesterday that the pandemic actually reshaped how she views the mission as being even more service-oriented and finding creative ways to serve people, especially during that time when, you know, there were limitations on who you could see in person and where you had to serve. So I know she views it differently, but you bring up mobile DMV. So are there certain things that you would change as clerk if you had the chance?
Well, I'll tell you what. Mobile DMVs, yes. The very first thing I would do with mobile DMVs is turn it into a mobile clerk's office, putting wheels on it, taking these services directly into people's communities, lunchtime at works, the different, I go to events every day. Every day I'm at 3 or 4 different events after work, during work. And I look it around and I'm like, wow, you know, if we had a mobile DMV with wheels, I could sit right here and we can provide services to people that need it on the spot. Not to mention there's 19 towns. Well, why don't we have mobile DMVs in 19 towns?
Yesterday I got an email from a listener named Gary who said, Evan, as far as I'm concerned, a good county clerk is someone who oversees a smooth DMV because no one ever wants to go to the DMV. It's like going to the dentist.
Yes.
Is that a fair way of describing the DMV experience?
Listen, I drive to Livingston County, to Geneseo's DMV, just to avoid going to a Monroe County. And I've done that for years. And it's not just me. Listen, I'm getting calls, and this is not an exaggeration. I get calls every day, at least one call, at least for the last several weeks, from an employee saying, please work hard to make sure you take this office, because what's happening now is causing all of us, or most of us, to be unhappy where they work. And look, I think employees are the most important resource for any organizations, which is why I believe in things like the employee-driven staffing model, where employees are able to contribute and kind of shape the policies. And the thing is, customer service always starts and ends with our employees, right? And the common thing that I get from people that are using the services are, they're not seeing happy people at the DMV or the clerk's office. Not that we don't have great employees. They just seem to be unhappy, validated by the phone calls that I get on a regular basis.
On the other side of our only break of the hour, Peter's a radio host on WYSL. I bet you they have more breaks than we do. We have one break here. We're going to take it now. We're going to come back, and I want to talk about an issue that Peter has written about on his... I mentioned it's peterforcountyclerk.com is his website. He also has a Facebook page and posts and engages with the community there. And one of the issues that Peter has written about during this campaign is regarding how the clerk's office deals with lawful gun owners.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. Listeners, if you have any feedback, et cetera, you can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. Peter Vasquez, my guest this hour. Jamie Romeo was here yesterday. She is the Democrat running for county clerk. The Republican is Peter Vasquez, and we'll come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about a new program designed to keep young people here, young college graduates, people working in the trades, people who would have options to either stay in Rochester and the Rochester Finger Lakes region or move out of state, move to another city, choose somewhere else. What does keep people here and how are they trying to do it with this new program? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Demela emails the following, says, I called in yesterday regarding this thorn in my side and I want to hear Peter Vasquez's opinion. I see vehicle registration as government exploitation, a racket, and a shakedown of its citizenry. If the money is indeed in need, why not just make it a vehicle tax that is to be paid each year when the vehicle is inspected or mailed in or paid online? To be forced to jump through hoops and pay in excess of $100 every 2 years for a vehicle that officials already know is in one's possession is intellectually insulting on top of the aforementioned. I would love to know what would have happened back in the days of cowboys had government officials attempted to have cowboys pay to register their horses. I would like to know what Mr. Vasquez's take is on vehicle registration. That is from Demela.
Well, thank you for the question, Demela. I truly appreciate that. And you know, I talk a lot about, on my show, I talk about this a lot, is trickery, right? Malcolm X actually has brought that up several times, trickery in politics, more so trickery on the left. See, when you use terms like taxes, that turns people off. You can't defend the tax. But so we call it vehicle registration. And the thing is this, even though we collect money when we provide this service at the county clerk's office, anytime an individual is paying for a service in a government entity, Evan, that's a tax. And that's basically what vehicle registration is. Now, whether should we have it, whether we shouldn't have it, I do see that there is there's some validity in making sure that we have accountability for who's on our roads, especially when it comes to issues of claims. You know, you hit somebody, we want to know who owns that car because you got to be held accountable. I agree with that. But you see, this is where advocacy comes in. This is where the clerk, even though not a policy-making office, should be creating some of the biggest noise out there saying, hey, I mean, my son registered, redid his driver's license, for example, $95. Now, you and I, Evan, may say $95. Well, that's, you know, that's a couple lunches for us, right? The thing is, for a 21-year-old in the middle of just bought his first house, $95, but he can't function without his license. My question is, where is the noise? Where is the amount of people that you've led to go to Albany with you to say, listen, we need to reduce this, especially in a state where the current clerk is a member of the party that's run the state in the county. And if we can't get that, then how are you advocating? So yes, I definitely believe that vehicle registration, along with other fees that we have in the county clerk's office, far exceed. As far as the cowboys, well, remember, back then, there weren't such things as gun permits. So I think the government then knew better than to try to infringe on people's personal rights.
I knew you'd be getting into guns. We're going to talk about guns in a second. But the broader philosophical view that I'm hearing from you, again, correct me if I'm wrong here, is that if you are the county clerk, you will enforce the law, but you will also, when you see the law misstepping, you will advocate from your position to change it?
Absolutely. And not just me, though, Evan, because, see, you know, there is a truth to when you have advocacy in numbers, right? I believe that when someone is advocating for significant change in our community, everybody knows about it. And if nobody knows about it, then really, who are you advocating? I mean, it's like me and you having a conversation saying, Heaven, can you do your show at 1 o'clock because it's better for my constituency? But nobody knows I asked that. Because, see, the real pressure comes in, especially in politics, when you get people to understand why you're advocating, because votes matter. And I'll tell you what, when you're sitting there in front of Kathy Hochul or in front of Jeremy Cooney, who's the chair of transportation, and you're saying, listen, I've got 300 or more voters here that are saying this needs to change, I guarantee you it'll change. But that comes at a cost, especially when you're fighting against your own policy or your own party. Trust me, I know.
Peter Vasquez is running for county clerk. It's peterforcountyclerk.com. On the issues of guns, I want to read some of what you wrote on your Facebook page recently, and we can talk more about that.
Yes.
You write, quote, I advocated for the restoration of constitutional rights to lawful gun owners and the return of services to Monroe County residents and businesses that Clerk Jamie Romeo arbitrarily took away. Instead of addressing these concerns, she chose to seek the endorsement of a group that supports doubling down on heavy-handed laws and regulations targeting lawful gun owners and businesses, all under the pretense of combating gun violence. When will these people learn that lawful gun owners are not the ones creating the violence in our communities? All the background checks in the world will not stop criminals from criminally obtaining weapons and using them to inflict violence and commit crime in our communities. End quote. The organization you were talking about that Clerk Romeo sought the endorsement of was, I think, Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense.
That's correct.
You view them as sort of out of the mainstream with their advocacy?
I think that they are about as extreme in government gun control than any other group out there. Yes, very much so.
Okay. Well, when you look at polls, the idea of background checks are quite popular.
So, I'm not opposed to background checks. As a matter of fact, there's very few people that I know that that would say, listen, we do have a problem with mental health in our nation. That is a fact. And when there is many in the second, you know, there are people out there that prefer constitutional carry, right? And I can agree with that in some cases. But I also believe that we do need to have checks and balances, right? But to sit there and partner with a group that does that would prefer, in their own statements, would prefer to remove guns from everybody's home, that's not advocating for the Constitution of it. And that's what that group promotes, not just background checks.
I think that they, I don't want to speak for that group. I think that they are in favor of some limitations or even confiscation of, you know, AR-15s. Not all. I don't think that they're in favor of confiscating all firearms. Probably not most firearms, right?
Well, from what I gathered from their website, and I haven't had a face-to-face conversation with this group, from what I gather from their website, they're very much anti-Second Amendment, yes.
Okay, so
the policies that they support. I remember the current vice president said on day one of her presidency, if elected, is to take away everyone's guns. I mean, she made that statement recently.
Kamala Harris?
Yes.
Said that she's going to take away everyone's guns?
I mean, okay, so maybe
her running mate is a gun owner.
He's also claimed to be in war, which he wasn't, and a few other claims that he made, but that's a whole nother show, I'm sure.
I don't think Kamala Harris said on day one she's taking guns away.
You know what? If you don't have another break, so I can't look it up during break, but I will find that
we'll
statement
try to
and
find
send it to you.
I don't think that's the position of the Harris campaign.
Okay.
Here's why I bring that up here. I want to understand when you say, in your words, I advocated for the restoration of constitutional rights to lawful gun owners.
Yes.
And the return of services to Monroe County residents and businesses that Clerk Jamie Romeo arbitrarily took away.
Correct.
How did she take those away?
Well,
what happened?
She pulled her presence or the county clerk's presence from all gun shows countywide, right, which was a huge service to people. You've got to make appointments to get into the county clerk's office for a pistol permit or to transact on your pistol permit. There's been nothing put in place as far as outreach to educate on what it means to be a legal gun owner. That's someone who has chosen their political ideology over constitutional rights.
Part of what she talked about yesterday, she said, you know, she did not want to get into her own personal politics on gun laws. She said the job of the clerk is to enforce the law.
Yes.
She said on the advocacy side, she has supported sending educational materials to people who have permits to make sure they understand safe storage, things like that.
Absolutely.
Is that all right with you?
I have no doubt that if she said she's doing it, maybe she's doing it. I have no clue. But I do know this. Every gun owner that I have spoken to has said transacting pistol permit on your pistol permit, either getting it for the first time or not, is the most is one of the most aggravating and time-consuming and lengthy processes out there. Simply getting in. I've had reports of individuals that have waited 3 or 4 weeks to get in to see an appointment. Again, I have to ask, if it's not political ideology, then what's the basis for those kind of things? Front doors at the county buildings are locked. Why aren't some doors dedicated for, at the very least, our disabled residents and veterans to go in, which many are gun owners, to go in and transact on that? We talk about sending out information on gun safety. That's phenomenal. But where are the seminars over on Clinton Avenue partnering with police officer to remove guns? I'd rather see more legal gun owners, because the crimes are not being committed by legal gun owners, Evans. I understand that having a gun in the home statistically has led to things like suicide, things like domestic violence. But you know what, though? If the gun wasn't present, there were other items that were used. So I don't believe it's the gun. I believe it's the individual. And I know many of your listeners may say, oh, that's a Republican response. But it's true. And the fact of the matter is, we should be helping shift our culture to one that understands our Constitution. The county clerk is a constitutional officer, one that took an oath to defend that. And my personal opinion on the Second Amendment, or same-sex marriage for that matter, right, shouldn't play a role whatsoever, and every service that I offer should reflect that. So whether I agree with the Second Amendment or not doesn't matter. I should be out in the highest crime neighborhoods talking to parents about what it means to be a gun owner. And again, getting those registered that want to be registered, demystifying the value of gun ownership and our rights under the Second Amendment. And again, this isn't a political statement, Evan. This is a fact. Now, if the laws change, and the Second Amendment is no more, what would I do? Well, you know what? I would enforce those laws, too, and advocate for a change, because that's what we're supposed to do.
So just to make sure I understand, then, you think that the clerk's office is operating in a way that makes it way too difficult, onerous, to get an appointment, to get in the door, to get a permit in the first place?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And that thinking
is
validated.
And you would streamline that, you would make that easier.
Absolutely, along with all the other services. Actually, I'd like to see putting the pistol permit services into DMVs, into the rolling, I guess, county clerk concept, decentralizing that office so that we can have these services for the people that actually want to use them.
I'm trying as best I can to Peter hosts a radio show, and I'll come chat on Peter's radio show.
Absolutely.
And not as an advocate for anything, just because I think it's a good idea to continue discourse about how people form beliefs and how we communicate better. That's what I'd be happy to talk to you about.
Dialogue is the foundation of growth.
You got
that.
And
if we can't talk, then who can talk? And people with microphones have the biggest obligation to have integrity and have that dialogue, sir.
And by the way, I think one of your fans sent this note here.
I have a fan on WXSI. No,
you probably have more than you think.
Listen, I do listen to you more often than some would think.
Peter, Dallas says, he always does an intro in Spanish, and he sounds so excited and friendly when he does it. It makes me want to learn Spanish, like I'm missing out on a club or something.
Look at that. Now, you know, si quiere hablar español, me deja saber. I'll gladly work with you. And you know, I talk Spanish on my show. It's not a Spanish show per se, but again, my whole intent is to help people bridge. You know, this whole concept of conservatism and liberalism, it's absurd to me. Where's the bridge? Who's bridging that concept? My show has had a lot of success reaching into the black and brown community, a conservative-leaning radio, but it's because, again, I focus on discourse. I focus on dialogue. I've had, even an anti-Semite on my show, to talk about his views, because if we're not seeing other people's views, how can we help them grow?
Well, that's a different day.
And
if you want, podemos hacer toda la entrevista en español. That's up to you.
Bueno, tú hablas español.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
It's very rusty. It's very rusty. It goes back a long time, back to university days. But let me just, and I actually want to talk to you in a moment about how you see if we're going to, and I don't like categorizing voters, just the Hispanic voter. I mean, the Latino vote. That's probably too big of a category, but there are some interesting trends I want to talk to you about in a moment. Let me just close the loop on a couple things with gun laws. I take your point. If you're the county clerk, number one, you're enforcing the law. Number two, you're going to advocate for where you think the law should be changed. And number three, you're going to make it so people who want pistol permits, et cetera, want to legally go about their business, aren't going to feel like it is onerous.
Correct.
Too difficult to do it. Is that a fair summation?
That is correct, yes. And demystifying that whole concept behind having a gun or gun ownership.
Okay. In your post, you know, you brought up background checks. I'm looking at literally a one-month-old new set of Pew research. And it's a long list of items that Pew looked at with Republicans, Democrats, Independents on gun laws. But here's part of that. Quote, there is broad partisan agreement on some policy, gun policy proposals, but most remain politically divisive. Majorities of U.S. adults in both partisan coalitions somewhat or strongly favor two policies that would restrict some gun access. Number one, preventing those with mental illness from purchasing guns. 88% of Republicans, 89% of Democrats support this measure. The next is increasing the minimum age for buying guns to 21 years old. That's 90% of Democrats, 69% of Republicans. And majorities in both parties also oppose allowing people to carry concealed firearms without a permit. That's 91% of Democrats, 60% of Republicans. Where are you on those three proposals?
Absolutely. You know, I do stand with all of these. I do believe that the issue of mental health, again, has become such an issue and such a crisis in our country that, yes, we definitely need to ensure that we are at least either limiting or restricting, I guess, guns from getting into the wrong hands. As far as, what was the other one, increase in minimum wage or minimum age?
Minimum age, yep.
Again, we stand. Most of us are okay with those restrictions, even those of us that say we should be able to constitutional carry, because we understand.
But you'd take the age from 18 to 21, despite the fact that you can serve at war, and then you'd come home and not be able to legally own a firearm?
Oh, man, that's a whole nother show that we can get into one day. But yes, I would support that. But then with that being said, I would also support those that are entering the military at a younger age to have some special special rules around them. Because you're right, if you can go into war. But with all that being said, the part that every one of those studies are missing, Evan, is the fact that nothing is addressing the cultural issue and the real crime that's happening in our community. I mean, we had recently a ghost gun house, or a house where there was ghost guns being made, being manufactured, I guess. And if there's one, you know there's others. And that's not being addressed, right? Figuring out why is it that we have such a mental health crisis in our community that's leading our young people, which seems to be the ones that are grabbing these guns more than others. There's nothing to seem. It just all these policies are to go after those that said, listen, I haven't picked up a gun and hurt anybody. I just want it so I can defend myself. I want it so that I can hunt, you know, all those different things. But until there's something that addresses the cultural issue, that shift from, hey, let's work together for a solution to victimhood. Listen, guns are always going to be a problem, and they're never going to be the legal gun owner.
Peter Vasquez is running for Monroe County Clerk. He's the Republican in the race. Peter for countyclerk.com. Rick emails to say, Evan, like your guest, I am a Puerto Rican, but I was born and raised in New York City, not Rochester. I was raised as a Roman Catholic as well. I would remind Mr. Vasquez that faith is best represented by actions, not words. Just consult the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, in which we learn that those who will enjoy eternal life with God are those who fed the hungry, helped the ill, clothed the naked, and visited those in prison. Those who failed to do that will endure eternal damnation. So I would be more interested in how the policy positions he articulates are consistent with Matthew 25 if he's going to proclaim that he is a Christian. Y yo también hablo en español, although my computer doesn't allow me to enter the grammatical markers used in Spanish. That is from Rick. Go ahead, Peter.
Rick, un placer conocerte. And you know what? He makes a very valid statement. And I have to say, and this is why I'm a chaplain, not a pastor, because I don't remember the scriptures verbatim, and I don't remember exactly Matthew 25. But I understand the book in its entirety. See, this is the thing, and he makes a very valid point as far as your faith, your actions really define who you are. And again, this is why I started off by saying, this is why I have my show. Understanding your balance of faith, politics, and entrepreneurship, and understanding what that means to you is where this all begins, whether you want to call it Christianity or Muslim or whatever else. You know, you can even call it, you know, you're worshiping Donald Duck. It doesn't make a difference. But understanding that your whole purpose is the betterment of others, then you know what? I think you'll be all right in everything that you do. The problem is we have so many people that are focused on their problem, their situation, or their own personal growth, that they forget that it requires all of us to grow together to have a phenomenal society that is focused on growth, not on victimhood.
Rick, thank you for the email.
Carrie
writes to say, what would Mr. Vasquez do to improve DMV-based voter registration? According to the New York State Board of Elections, Monroe County is one of a handful of counties that does not track or report problems with DMV-based voter registration or whether or not these problems are resolved by Election Day. As a co-chair of a large polling site, I have encountered many frustrated voters with DMV-related registration problems. What would he do to improve transparency and accountability within this interagency process?
Absolutely. And you know what? That's an interesting question. And considering all the valid and verified and peer-reviewed data that I've seen in regards to the voter rolls just in the last few years, I'd say she's right, Carrie. There is a significant problem there. The very first thing that I would do is establish a partnership with the Board of Election, with both commissioners on both sides of the aisle, look at the policies that we have in place, and at that point develop a system that we are able not only to track the registrations as they happen at the DMV, but also follow up with the clerk, with the commissioners to ensure that the data that they're receiving is the same data that we received. Again, an easy fix, something that could be monitored once the registration happens, though, because that is not a function of the county clerks. It would move over to the BOE. But again, it's all about leadership. Would I follow up and say, hey, commissioners, did you receive this data with 105 people that registered? Because we shouldn't know how they registered as far as political affiliation. And these are the names. Can you verify that you received them? Yes, you received all of them. Wonderful. One check done. It's moved on to them. And it's easy, simple. It's one of the easiest things. One of the easiest things that most people can do, I would assume. The fact that that hasn't been resolved yet just goes to show the political ideology that runs this office, because, again, in order to be able to resolve an issue that may or may not impact your political party's advantages, I mean, that's why someone wouldn't, I have to assume.
Thank you, Carrie, for the email. Before we go here, you've talked this hour about your own life and some of the work that you've done in your description to make sure that communication, an open line of communication, is brought into, as you've said, more Black and brown homes, you say, in Monroe County, in our region, through your radio show, through the work that you do. And, you go back, Peter, 8, 10, 12, 16 years in political cycles, Democrats talked a lot about changing demographics and sort of the increasingly blue nature of the country, given that people who are, if you want to use broad categories, Hispanic, Latino, which I think can be overly broad, but if we want to use those broad categories, those have voted more blue than red historically. And I think that over time what's happened is people have been surprised on the political left that Donald Trump is polling better this year among people of color, more Hispanic or Latino voters, not a majority, but more are moving toward, Republicans are doing better among those categories, and they're really doing well with men. Mm-hmm. So Trump is doing better in general with men of color, and the Republican Party is doing better with men of color. Why do you think that is?
So I believe in philosophies, right? I don't believe in party politics, for example. I think in large part, many in the Hispanic and Black communities are starting to realize that, wait a minute, this whole concept of trickery in politics is real. And they're starting to pay more attention, I think, in large part. I think I think our bank accounts are probably starting to realize that, wait a minute, there is a significant difference today in politics now, and I do have to pay attention. I think many people have realized in the Black and brown community that our essential rights, well, like the Second Amendment, for example, because remember, once upon a time, Blacks were prevented, even after slavery ended, from having guns. Why was that? Well, because we don't want an uprise, right? Those kind of things. Are starting to realize that those rights that they fought so hard to have are being put at risk by a political ideology that happens to be on the progressive left. And I want to be clear, in my mind at least, there are a lot of phenomenal, great Democrats out there, and many of them are our family. As a matter of fact, I come from a long line of people that are a legacy in this city from advocating for the end of racism, especially in the Hispanic community. I mean, I'm part of that lineage. I stand with all those things, and I think a lot more Hispanics are realizing the difference in the political parties today, because there is a significant difference between the progressive left, what we call the progressive left, and a Democrat.
Will you come back sometime? I know our shows are on at the same time. It's a shame, Peter Vasquez. But will you come back sometime and talk about where especially Hispanic men are going and with political ideology? Come back sometime.
I will always come back on your show. You let me know. Listen, all I need is a couple of days to find a guest host. And believe it or not, I got people lining up to guest host for me these days.
It can be a challenge, Peter. But, you know, I mean, I go through that too. It's hard to take vacation. I want to thank you for being here. And I want to thank you for making time for the program. Listeners, his website, if you want to learn more, peterforcountyclerk.com. The candidates, by the way, typically have their own Facebook pages and other social media. You'll find Peter there. I suspect you'll find Jamie Romeo there. Jamie was on the program yesterday, the Democrat running for county clerk. Peter, the Republican, here today. Thank you for making the time, sir. We appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you very much, and thank you for your listeners.
And more connections coming up in a moment.